Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Decide where you want to be. I've seen so many coaches, good coaches, go in the wrong place. They go in the under 12s and they really want to be in the under 18s.
Hey guys, you're now listening to the Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA licensed football coach, coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy.
Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and today I've got a very special guest with me. My guest today is Alf Galustian. Good morning, Alf. How are you?
Yes, good in under the circumstances. I'm sure everybody, all your listeners too, are having it pretty tough this year, or hopefully be over, so I'm glad to be with you.
Perfect. Alf, just for the listeners that maybe aren't too familiar with who you are or what you do, would you mind just giving us a bit of detail around that, please?
Well, I'm the co-founder and the international director of a program called Curva Coaching, which is a skills program. And we'll go a little bit into the history and the origin later on. But it's probably used by most federations around the world and most pro clubs, certainly. I've worked with 51 pro clubs plus 17 odd federations and in my career. And so Curva is a program that's a development program for young boys and girls between 4 years old and 16 years old. So it's pretty specialized. And it's also, as it's evolved, suitable for players of all abilities. So the Curva business, which I'm my son really runs now, my role is actually devising curriculum. It's evolved so that this curriculum suits players of all abilities. You've got the pro clubs using it, and then you've got grassroots kids who are just learning the game.
Brilliant. So, I first want to take you right back to the start of your coaching journey. You've been coaching a long time. We had a brief discussion ahead of this interview, in terms of your capacity now, much more of a mentor. And, you just touched on there that your son has kind of taken over the reins a little bit. I just want to take you right back to the start of that journey. Where did Alf Galustian first get involved in coaching, and what was it about coaching that kind of just drew you?
It's a good question. It's a long time ago, so let me try to remember. I suppose it's when did I get involved with football? And as far as I can remember, from 4 or 5 years old, that's all I thought about. And I was a young player at Wimbledon, and I had 4 or 5 knee operations, went into non-league football, didn't work out. And one day, a friend of mine, Dave Collier, he was a goalkeeper, Sutton United, one of the teams over here, good team. And Dave was an FA coach, and he said, look, you're not playing anymore. What about coaching? And I thought, no, I'm too young to coach, But anyway, he persuaded me, I did it. I liked it because it was a way of keeping in football. So that was part one of the story. And part two was the USA. A American American went to coach and play a little bit, but that didn't work out, but coaching mainly. And met Charlie Cook. This is back in the early 80s. Charlie was a great player at Chelsea, one of my heroes, actually. Anyway, we met we started at soccer schools. You know, in America, there's a lot of soccer schools, and the Americans are just so thirsty for knowledge. And Charlie and I started a soccer school. And one day we were in Philadelphia at a convention. In the US, they have these big soccer conventions. And we walked past a room and we saw this elderly guy and with four or five kids, each with a ball. And there was only about 10 people sitting in the room. We went in there and that was Will Kerber. And Charlie and I just, after half an hour, thought, wow, we've never seen. First of all, it was every player with a ball. In our careers, we'd never seen that. And the other thing Will said was that in the formative ages, this is between 10 and 14, 15, development is about the individual, not the team. And of course, we'd never heard that approach either. So that was the part two, and maybe the part three, because I think it'll tell you the story. 6 months later, I went to do my full, it was like the pro license, it was called a full badge in those days, back in 83, 84. And Bobby Robson, who was a great coach, Bobby had brought Will Kerber to work with the England under 16 team at Littleshaw. There was a place called Littleshaw, which was the headquarters of all English football. And it was a 3 week course. So, and just, this was after Philadelphia, Will was there and I sat next to him every day at breakfast, just listening to him, absorbing all his ideas. His work with Ryan Michaels and his work with Cruyff. And I called, in those days, there's no mobile telephones and Zoom and whatever. So I called Charlie, who was living in the USA. And I said, Charlie, look, this is a sort of a handle that we can put to our soccer camps, Kerber. And so to talk to Will, he wasn't really interested in going into that sort of business of football. Subsequently, he went to the UAE, Dubai, etc. So one of the misunderstandings about Kerber is Will's role. So actually in 84, we bought the rights to use his name. And Will wasn't, from 84, really involved with Charlie and me. So Kerber coaching was a label that we got, and then we built the curriculum around that.
Right, brilliant. And then going down that path of obviously designing the curriculum, you know, you've later ended up, you know, designing your own coach education platform as well. Now, there's many people, certainly newer coaches coming into the realm of coaching, aren't too familiar with your methods. Would you mind just going into a bit of detail around what your methods are specifically? And you talked briefly that it was touching on more the individual aspects, and I think that's becoming more prominent with all the coaches nowadays, more specifically with the coach education bucket within the FA as well.
If this is helpful. So when you start in development, whatever development program is, you've got to think about the pathway, the age groups. And so if you think that between 4 and 7, you've got this element where there's no drills, you just got to play. And then between 8 and 12, we've actually devised Kerber to fit into this pathway. That's why I'm explaining it like this. So between 8 and 12, it's the core skills, receiving the ball, passing the ball, 1v1, which is, you know, probably what we're best known for. Striking the ball, kicking and passing and shooting, which is exactly the same technique. And in between those age groups, you focus on that. And underpinning all that is what we call ball mastery. So that's, again, in Kerber coaching, we've got 154 different ball mastery moves. They're all on our videos and books, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess a lot of your listeners would have, I haven't been to a pro club that hasn't got our videos and books. And like I said, I've worked with 51 of them. And so a lot of your coaches will be familiar. But ball mastery is a mother and father of the core skills. So 8 and 12, you immerse them in that. And then between 12 and 16, this pathway is now you're playing 11v11 globally. So you have to have the players responsibility in the game. What they do in the game, where they do it in the game, you know. So 12 and 16 is more team related. And then Curver at 17 to 21 is very, very specialized. And it's called, used to be called position-specific training, where you work with certain positions, again, in technical work. But I've kind of changed it in the last few months. This is a scoop for you, yes, is that I don't need this position-specific. I'm speaking to my late great friend, Gerald Houllier, who I worked for almost 30 years. The last that work that I did with Gerald was talking about, it's not position specific, it's zone specific, area specific, because the modern player has got no number on his back. They defend, they attack, right? So, and this is one of the major things I'm working on this year or in 21. But that's a very specialized area, and that's for the players, serious players, 7 to 21. Now, you could probably bring it down to the younger ages, 12 to 16. I'm not saying that's absolutely possible. But so you've got the development pathway, and then you've got Curver within that development pathway, if that makes sense.
Mm. And just on that, then, you know, you talked there about that, not position specific, and I think zone specific, I think it's a very good point, actually, you know, in that you're making that. Players are just so versatile now, and they're expected to do so much more than they were maybe 10 or even as recently as 5 years ago. Just on that, then, you know, obviously a large part of the curve of work, from certainly from what I understand, it is very much technical based. So when you start going towards 17 to 21, what does that start to look like in terms of the zone specific stuff? Is it still heavily technical, or is it now moving along to the tactical side of things? Because some of the, I guess, debates that there've been in the past around the Curver methods is very much focused around technical and maybe not so much on a tactical element. Still, I guess, really help the players develop game understanding, but more so providing and supporting helping the development of the players with the tools that are required in the game. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense. And it's one of the, I know later you've got a question. You said to me, what was my biggest bugbear in this long career? And that is trying to clear up some of the misconceptions, which is fine. I'm not defensive. You know, I believe in what we do. So let me answer the first part of that player, zone specific 17, 21 year old. So, for example, 90% of goals are scored 25, 30 meters from goal in something what's called the golden zone. In Curver, we've got 1v1 sets. They're called mirror moves. A mirror move is one movement, one feint, if you like, or change of direction or stop and start, that has two parts. So the opponent can never, the first part is exactly the same. So the opponent goalkeeper can't guess which you're going to pull. So there's four. So if you imagine they're a pair, so there's eight moves put into four pairs. One pair is going at the goal. So if you're running at the goal to pull a feint, either you go right, shoot with your left, you're right, you go left, you shoot with your left. There's one pair that you go across the goal, so right to left and then left to right. There's one pair where you cut in and shoot. Now that's really specialized stuff. And imagine if you're a pro team or you're any team and you need to score another 10 goals a season. I'm saying to you, there's your 10 goals, because we know all the goals are scored in that area, in that 30 meter area. In other words, at that specialized pro age, Curver can contribute towards a specific goal. It's not a trick. It's we want to score 10 more goals a season. Now, when you go downwards, of course, you stick to the pathway. And the pathway, the kids are playing 3v3, 4v4 when they're 6, 7, 8 years old. They go to 7v7, 9v9 when they're 8 to 12, 8 to 11. Then they go to 11v11. So you adapt Curver into that, but then you've got to look at your session planning. And you know this, and you're better than me, yes. Session planning is an art. It's not a science.
I tell you.
It's like cooking, right? You know, you put whatever ingredients. And people who misunderstand Curver haven't really seen the Curver session plans, which again fit to the under sevens, the 8 to 12s, 12, 16, 17, 21s. Mm. And when you see, so it's a mix of, what is it a mix of? It's a mix of repetition, a mix of graduated pressure. That means the coach is in control of the pressure on the player. Mm. And then full pressure. people have long misunderstood that in a session plan, a curve is 80% of the first part, repetition. It's not. It's 45% of the last part, full pressure. So let's say you're doing 1v1 in Kerber, and there's 48 1v1s in Kerber, right? So you always divide them into the first part is repetition. So I mean, 3 or 4 minutes repeating, say the double scissors, whatever the game move is. And then the coach goes into a graduated pressure practice, still with 1v1, but the coach controls the pressure on the player with the ball.
Right.
And then the coach puts them into full pressure. The coach doesn't interfere. It's totally player controlled. And it's that mix that in Kerber, and certainly is involved. When Charlie and I met Will in 84, it was 80%. Will's drills and games were 80%. The defender didn't challenge. They faked the challenge. And one of the things I think Charlie and I have done in the last almost 40 years is to understand that the learning process, first of all, repetition is deadly boring. So you've got, as a teacher, especially these younger ages, you've got to interest the kids. You won't interest them in pure repetition. You've got to go on to graduated pressure. You've got to go on to full pressure.
So just in terms of that, you know, you've definitely given me a different perception of what the product is from what my initial perceptions were. And I think it's very much, you know, aligned with what I kind of do now myself, in that sense that I think, first of all, with my own philosophy, I never really do anything that's unopposed at all. But certainly I do dial up and, you know, higher and lower that pressure in that respect. So I think there always should be some sort of element of a context. And, you know, for me, it might start with just a static defender, just so they've got a visual context to kind of work with. And then it might be me, you know, drip feeding information in there around, okay, what the actual context is if they can't quite visualize it themselves.
Yes, can I just, I just thought something for you listeners, when you said that, really good point. For a long time, you know, especially in topics like 1v1, you know, you put a cone down as a static defender or a still person. Can I recommend that you don't do that anymore? That one of the problems with ball mastery in 1v1, which we caused, you know, because much of our early material was focused on that, is a player looking down at the ball. And when you have somebody moving towards them, they tend to look up. When you've got a static person, they'll still look at the ball because they know you've signaled to them that the cone's not going to move or the static player's not going to move. So, in other words, drop that, get rid of that. I mean, this is just my suggestion.
Yeah.
Forget about the static, but have some movement. You can control that movement because you can say, don't tackle.
100%. So, it's more like a shadow plane. I totally agree with that. And I think, you know, what I tend to do sometimes as well is maybe, again, in the process of getting to that full pressure moment, it's now, right, you've gone from being a shadow player to now only being able to be live in particular areas of the grid or the area that we're working in. So it might have like a 5 meter radius around the player. And it might be a challenge. Let's say, for instance, working on dribbling as an example, the player who's on the ball has to maybe make their way through that 5 meter radius, but the defender can't come out.
Yes, you control it. You know, so what it is, coach controlled, player control. So if you think exactly like that when you teach core skills,
100%. So I definitely think that's a, you know, way forward in terms of helping players develop, certainly in the context of the actual game itself. Now, one of the other questions I would have to you and with the Kerber method, and this is just not specifically for you because it's Kerber, just generally.
Sure.
We move into this, you know, and it's a debate I've been having with a lot of coaches recently. We've definitely moved into a world of coaching, especially more specifically in football, but I think generally in coaching, where we're trying to become more holistic with everything that we do, which I think is great. But I personally feel that some of the education for the coaches might have started to lack in certain areas, more specifically the technical aspects. Now, a lot of the work that you guys do is heavily focused around the technical aspects and, you know, some of the finer detail within that. The current coach education pathway, in my opinion, doesn't really support as much of that as it used to. What would you advise to those coaches who have not quite got a strong underpinning of some of that technical element, and maybe are looking to get that? And secondly, what is your opinion of there being a technical element to it in terms of the technical detail that some of these, I guess, these moves or these actions within the game require, and whether there's a set way, because a lot of coaches, certainly from my generation, probably would have just looked at a coach educator and be like, all right, that's what the coach educator has told us, A, B, C, that's what it is. Without, and then having that mindset, they kind of just go tunnel vision on that particular way of doing it and kind of just disregard any other way of doing it. Whereas I feel that it's become much, certainly for me, I've definitely gone from having a bit of that mentality now shifting to the point where actually I don't really, yes, I want you to be more efficient and refine how you're doing it. However, I'm not really bothered how you do it as long as you achieve the end goal. So I'm now more about setting tasks for my players rather than setting the process, if that makes sense.
Okay. So that's a long question. So let me go for the second part first. So I learned a good lesson. I worked 12 years with the French Federation, with Gérald Houllier especially. And those 12 years in France, that was 84 to, they didn't qualify for the US World Cup. There was a lot of bad feeling amongst the coaches, you know, very political, like it is in most federations, and very opinionated. And I will say to you that's because I work for so many federations around the world, that's the very nature of the body, the beast, right? It's political, and people are paid, and they want, you know, they say, here's the way, and everybody tries to follow the way. One thing I learned way back then, both Gerald and Amy Jacquet, from them especially, was that there isn't any one way. The only truth is science, right? And football's not a science. Football's more of an art, if you like, without inflating it too much. Only science is truth. And therefore, everything's open. Every way, your Yaz's way, Alf's way, is open. As long as you believe what you teach, then you become a good teacher, because that's what a coach is, really, especially in development. So I think you've got to, when I talk about pathway, when you go to senior football, et cetera, the coaches at pro level, et cetera, they get players. They expect the players to be able to receive the ball, pass the ball, run with the ball, protect the ball, score goals, stop goals. But when you're in development, everything is open. There's all sorts of ways to teach. So one, believe in whatever you believe. If you believe in Kerber, teach Kerber. If you believe in something else, teach that. But one thing that, and it goes into one of the questions you sent me earlier, was what's my bugbear? My bugbear is people who say, this is, I know. You know, if you talk about a certain style or a certain way of teaching, somebody says, yeah, I know. And I remember from Gerald was saying, when anybody says, I know, walk away, because there's nothing to talk about. And so the beauty of the learning is that it's almost infinite. And so to all your coaches, because I went through everything you did. Remember, I've had a long, long career. All the frustrations you've had, et cetera, I experienced them too, all the doubts. And the more, the older I got, the more I thought, well, if you teach what you believe, then you become a more effective teacher. And, but then you can't stop at learning. You know, learning is infinite. So you, when I talk to you, I learn something. So the first thing I would say is that there's nothing absolute. If you do an FA English course or a Spanish course or a Brazilian course, you get some good things, but they don't know any more than you do. You see, if you're a student, in fact, I think you're more open than they, but politically they can't be open. You if it has to follow that path, and then the country's associated, you have to follow that path. That's what it is. So you're a youth coach, in a way, it's very liberating. You've got a way, you do your way. Now, going back to the first one, how would people become better at technical coaching? Well, I would say this, and maybe when the program comes out, we've got some social handle and media handles. Kerber runs diploma courses, introductory diploma course, diploma one course, a diploma two course, where obviously it's and some are online now because of COVID, et cetera, but then a lot of them are live and they're in many countries. So if your listeners want to know more about how to learn Kerber, if you like, which is regarded as the gold standard in technical teaching, then maybe at the end of the program, we can show them links so they can link onto.
Definitely, and I think that'll be very much appreciated. Look, Alpha, I just want to take you back to your journey a little bit more. What is, you know, throughout all these years of coaching, you talked there almost 40 odd years and you worked with some great people. And I'm sure we're going to go into a little bit more of that as we go through the conversation. But what are some of the biggest messages that you've taken away for yourself throughout this time?
Well, partly things that I'd not regret, but I wish I'd done more, was listen more and talk less. And that may be a tip. When I was a young coach, especially, that's one of the things I thought you could talk teaching, if you like. But the younger players are, the talk's wasted. They want to see action. And that's why also I love Curbert, because you can't talk a 1v1 move or a killer pass or touch direction, you know, where the ball falls when you receive it. Mm-hmm. Or ball master, you can't talk it. You have to do it. So one was, you know, do more, talk less, listen more. I think the value of, learning, we've already talked about learning, but it's infinite. You can always learn. But I think just actually putting the time in. So the same way a player puts in time to get fitter and stronger and quicker and more skillful, then a coach, I think, that, you know, to all the guys that are listening, you know, there's so much to learn, and therefore it's difficult to wing it. And there's, for grassroots coaches, who I've got the greatest admiration for all over the world, because they do things free in their own time. They've obviously got jobs sometimes 10 hours a day. Then they go home and they change and they go to training. And, you know, I admire these people more than I can say. Therefore, those are the sort of people we've got to try to help by session plans, by drills, by experience, by mentoring, whatever way we can help them. When you're a professional coach, of course, you get paid for the job. So, you know, but imagine all the millions and millions of grassroots coaches who have to do something else and then coach. So one of the things that I try and do and I respect is, well, how can we, like programs like yours, perfect, because you can get people with experience. Like I said, the only good thing about age is, you know, you've seen things, and then maybe feed them through programs like yours, and then they come out and say, oh yeah, I learned this one thing, whether it's one thing or two things, you know. So that's probably along the way what I've learned most.
Definitely. I think you're right. I think, you know, have that with that age, you know, that experience comes obviously more opportunities to share that information that you've picked up. And I think, you know, just to kind of lead on that, then, you know, you've made reference to some of the clubs that you're working with, and you've got 50 odd clubs around the world that you're in partnership with or you've worked with in the past. I'm curious to know for yourself, you know, through those 40 years, you must have had some sort of influences in terms of mentors and, you know, some career-changing experiences for you along that way. Just want to, you know, would you mind just maybe sharing some of the maybe some of the most influential figures for you, and what were the biggest lessons you took from them?
Yes, and I think the way I'd like to do this is what I learned from them. I'd like to pass on to your listeners, and of course, we haven't got enough. We'd have to be here hours and hours and hours and hours. But just some of the just main things, and. Of course, I start with Will Kerber, because I think Will was a genius, and he was a difficult man, very, very difficult. But what I learned from him was what I said to you earlier on, that the development in the development ages, certainly between sort of 6 years old and 14 years old, we need to understand that individual development is as important, not more important, but as team development. So I learned that from Will. From Charlie Cook, Charlie was one of the great, great players and you know, my friend for more than 40 years and the co-founder of Curva. And from Charlie, I learned exactly what, if you're a technical coaching or teaching technical content, get to full pressure quickly, you know. And that's where me and Charlie broke away from Will very early on in 84, 85. And so if you describe yourself as a technical coach, don't fall in love with repetition, because although it's absolutely important, that's how the brain wires skills. With the younger players, like I said, it's boring. So you've got to hide it. You've got to disguise it. So it goes back to drill DNA. So what I learned from Charlie is get to the full pressure stuff very quickly. And from Gerald Houllier, who sadly passed away a couple of weeks ago, from Gerald, I understood humility, really, as far as the best people I've ever worked with haven't had any egos. You know, World Cup champions and big clubs, etc. And so the fact that you just see yourself as somebody experienced or maybe not so experienced or starting, and that's where you judge yourself. And the old Japanese, because I'm hugely influenced by Japan, hugely. I spent 20 odd years there. This whole idea that respect for age, not saying, you know, blindly, because you've got to also have the knowledge. But if you've worked hard for 20 years, then it stands to reason you've learned to.
Introducing Wondersuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the Wondersuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
In those 20 years, if you've done nothing in those 20 years, it doesn't matter how old you are, but if you have, and Gerald, you know, was one of those guys also I knew 30 odd years, that every year he had this hard work ethic. He'd study things. I'm not a big statistics man, but Gerald was on the FIFA's but you know, one of the FIFA technical directors. And to your listeners, statistics are important. I always just dismiss them. Like I said to you before, 90% of goals scored in the golden zone, you know, 20 meters from goal. Years ago, I thought, well, what's that? How's that got to do with my coaching? And it's got everything to do with coaching, because out of those 80% of goals, 70 or 80% of those goals are first time strikes. That means that if that's the case, that's a fact, it influences my drill DNA. It influences how I teach. It influences my session planning. So, you know, from Gerald, I learned the value of actually looking at statistics and then interpreting them in your coaching.
You talked about statistics. I think you make a great point. But I think one thing I kind of maybe just like to elaborate on, and it'll be interesting to get your views on this as well, is I want coaches to really understand that actually, yes, statistics are important. Looking at data is important. However, you need to look at the data in relation to the game that your players are going to be involved in. So as an example, correct me if I'm wrong, but those FIFA statistics are probably based on first team football within a certain environment. You know, not necessarily, you know, aimed at a 9v9 game at under 13s as an example, whatever that might look like. So I just really want to kind of, you know, make that point for, I guess, the listeners and the viewers, because certainly from my experience, I come across a lot of coaches who do base their practice design, their sessions around what's happening at the top end of the game. And then they're almost struggling to understand why it doesn't, you know, it doesn't have a direct impact on the players that they're working with.
Yes.
Negating the fact that actually you're not designing it for their game, you're designing it for that game.
Yes, but there are certain ones, like 30 metres from the last third, goals are scored and stopped there. Full stop, you know, whatever level. Okay, you might get a fluke. Not when they're playing 3v3, 4v4 in a 40 by 30 metre goal area. But as soon as the kids get 12 years old, it's 11v11, you know, 70 by 50 metres, or the space is now not comparable to senior football, but it's a space. And therefore, there are certain statistics. Your point is really a good point, because look at statistics that are relevant to zones of the field. There's no doubt that the last 30 metres from the time the players are 12 is where you score or you stop. Mm-hmm. And therefore, what are you going to do in those areas? And of course, if you condense that areas, and this is another, if we go on to people who influenced me, in relation to this field space, the fact that playing in small spaces, and as you get older, the speed of the game is quicker and you've got less time and space to play. And therefore, how do you condition players to, like in Spain, when I worked in Brazil, the coaches were so, their sessions were so dominated by, you know, I saw sometimes 10v10 in 20 by 20 meter area. It's impossible to play, but that's, so they had the right idea. I think that was a bit extreme, but that's if you're a coach and you want to design drill DNA and you want to compress, so what you're trying to do is, especially as a player, young players get better, is get them to play small spaces. So then you can devise drills and games that do that. So I think that, you know, there's certain statistics that actually nudge you into an area. There's certain styles of football because you know, now we really, in a weird way, I don't know if you remember, Yaz, there's a wonderful coach who I also knew, Rinus Michels. And he was in the 70s and he developed this term called total football. And Cruyff was his captain. Mm. And I remember these discussions because I knew him through Will Kerber. And so these discussions with Will and Rinus Michels, one day I remember, I think it was in a petrol station or somewhere, we're driving somewhere, and we're having this conversation. And total football was no numbers. Everybody did everything. Cruyff would come back and play at left back, and the centre forward would go and play a striker. But what Ryan Smith made a good point then was it was all to do with fundamental conditioning. The players were so fit. People always thought that the Ajax players and Cruyff, it was a skill. They were so fit that they could play that way. Mm. So again, that's another, I know we're talking about, well, what are the top models? Holland in those days was a top. How can you relate to that to kids? Well, you can, because you, first of all, if you your job is attacking when you've got the ball and attacking when you haven't got the ball, you attack the ball. Have that sort of attacking mentality that Rinus Michels had, then I think the kids also go up into a mindset. So I think everything at the top end influences everything we do, as even as grassroots coaches. Specifically, of course, they can't do the things as well as the top pros can, but the same principles actually do apply. You score and stop most goals in the last third. If you lose the ball, you have to try to press to win it. If you have the ball, you have to try to keep it. Those principles apply. And I think the beauty of Kerber for me is that you can't now, possession's here to stay, whatever anybody says, in my opinion, but you can't play possession football unless you can receive the ball and pass the ball. And I think you can't do that without a good degree of ball mastery. which Curva has this 30, 40 year curriculum on. So in other words, it enables, and it goes back to your question of people misunderstanding Curva. Without a program like Curva, it's very difficult to receive and pass the ball when you're being pressed in tight areas, because it's to do with feeling the ball, and which is caused by ball mastery curriculum.
Sure, but I think just on that, then, you know, you talk there about, I agree, there needs to be some sort of foundation to work from, essentially. Now, the debate I've had with a few coaches is, well, how important is it that it's done in a particular way, as long as the job's getting done, if that makes sense? And sometimes I do agree that it's good for the coach to have that knowledge and have that underpinning, so that if needed, they can kind of offer it out and support the player with that. However, I feel a lot of coaches are very much also going down the path of, well, no, this is the way it should be done.
Yes.
Now, obviously, the challenge that can give you is if a player is doing it successfully in their own way, then it's almost that if it's not broke, don't fix it. But coaches are too eager, in my opinion, at times to kind of, no, that's not how I want it done. I want it done in this way. So I guess, you know, to kind of come back to that curriculum and what you're saying, you talk there about the being able to master the ball, they need to have a good understanding of the technical aspects, which I totally agree with. However, how important is it for you then that those technical aspects are in line with what you would deliver, if that makes sense?
In our earlier discussion, when I was talking to you about pathway, so if you think of development, so we're not talking about senior football, right? We're talking about development. And so, you know, when we went to school, I didn't do very well at school, but not regular people. So you go to kindergarten, and then you go to primary school, and then you go to high school, and then you go to university. Well, football is one of these games that we want to go to university straight away, yeah. You know? And therefore, if you mimic that academic education which in Curva we do, so that in kindergarten, we love the game. It's all fun, it's all games. Like when you and I played when we were kids, we wouldn't think about drills and what position, et cetera. So kindergarten's that. When you go to primary school, you start learning to read and write. Well, ball mastery is reading and writing. So then when you go to high school, you start writing stories. So that's using effective game school. The skills you've learned in primary school, you'll now be putting together and writing essays or whatever another analogy. Then when you go to university, you specialize. Yeah, I'm going to be a number 9. I'm going to be a number 6. And so that's the way I would approach a development. If I was a development coach, I try to mimic what happens in academic schoolwork.
And, you know, I think that is a very interesting concept. And I think the more I think about it, what you've just said now, kind of resonates with, because I think it's subconscious. It's essentially what I do in some ways, in that when they're young, I just want to play, just play. Yes, I'll set you tasks rather than processes. And then as time goes on, depending on how you're getting on with that task, we might look at, you know, over the ages and stages, of course, look at refining that process, but more from a perspective of, rather than me highlighting something, it would be me having a conversation with you. I guess bringing, you know, a large part of, you know, the way I work is, I'm not too, you know, for the idea of developing independent players per se, because I don't think you'll ever get an independent player. My thing is, right, can we work towards developing an interdependent player? Someone who is technically competent, who's, you know, physically there and whatnot, but actually more importantly, psychologically and socially, they're still confident enough to actually reach out for that support should they need it. But more specifically, they're in tune with what they're doing to a point where they have such a great self-awareness around what they're doing and the impact of a specific action and what the outcome could be, but also visually assessing what's happening to say, okay, what's the risk versus reward factors for each of these moments. And I think that element for me is probably the key part. So I guess in terms of what you're saying, it probably in some ways is very much similar in that respect, because as they go through the stages, then you start to refine what they're doing. Now, I guess to kind of, you know, move on from that a little bit, I'm curious then, how much of an input do you then give to the players in that process, as opposed to saying, right, there's a process that we're going to follow, here's a curriculum. How do you decide, or is there times where you have to adapt the curriculum to suit the individual based on what they're actually doing, if it's not directly in line with what you've prescribed, if that makes sense?
Well, there's two, I interpret that in two ways, you know. So there was a period, which still exists too, in many federations around the world, where it was very important for young players to have input. And just on a practical point, I think it is, but if you go back to session planning, and so on a Monday, if you're a grassroots coach, you work maybe once a week or twice a week or three times. If you're a pro coach at an academy, okay, now the boys are over 12 are in most days. If you leave it too open, your session plan is going to be spoiled. In this way, you're a teacher, take responsibility of being a teacher. You know, you put all those years in, you've studied. Of course, but you can tell, you know, I tell you, while I think of your question, one of my grandsons is training at AFC Wimbledon, my old club, and very good coaching there. And one of the coaches that works with him has a really good way. He plays intensely or does drills intensely. And then he opens it up for about 30 seconds, 90 seconds, bang. It's not a discussion. People are going to have their say, but it's in 90 seconds. And then goes back to action. So that to me is true to the integrity of the session planning, that it's action you want, not speaking. And so that's in one way. The other point is that, think about the pathway I was talking about, you coaches out there, was when I'm saying, well, you've got the little ones, the kindergarten, and you've got primary school and high school and university. Decide where you want to be. I've seen so many coaches, good coaches, go in the wrong place. They go in the under 12s and they really want to be in the under 18s.
I agree.
Or they go in under 14s, but they want to work with adults. Yeah. I'm saying early on in your coaching career, decide where you want to be. And then in that area, there's a huge amount to learn. Don't think that you have to be, you know, a first team coach to have to study a lot. If you're under 12 coach, especially if you study Kerber, you better be prepared to study a lot. So I think that's an important consideration. Decide which age group you want to coach in this pathway that we've laid out.
I think, you know, you make a very good point, and it's one that I echo definitely. In this, a lot of coaches do maybe take on certain roles without having really a real passion for it. And I do certainly agree. I think you need to have a real passion for the age group and the types of players that you're working with. And it kind of comes back to one of your earlier points. And if you believe in that, then you'll become better at that.
It really
mirrors, you know, the mindset behind that. So, like, I just want to kind of, you know, come back to one of the questions you did touch on briefly around bugbears. Outside of the ones that you've just touched on previously in the conversation, what are some of your major bugbears just generally when it comes to coaching? You know, I'm sure, you know, in 40 years, you've probably seen so many things, and there's probably one or two real main things.
Bugbears.
Yeah.
Coaches that talk through a game, they stand on the touchline and they become TV commentators. You know, it's just incessant talking. And I remember as a young player at a pro club, and I was a left winger in those days. And God help me, there was a coach, and I used to hate it in one of the halves, because all that in those days, if you were number 11, you'd stay on the left, right? And he just walk up and down, and constantly, obviously, you're listening to this commentating. So from personal anecdotal experience, I just think, just be quiet and let the players play. Then what if you've got somebody to say it at halftime or say to the end, especially with kids. So that's bugbear. The other bugbear is some parents' unrealistic expectations of their kids. And this is more to do with the pro clubs and academies, and they're very good now, much better than they used to be. But and it's really, it's very difficult for them. I was coach who's educated Newcastle United for 7 years and worked with a fantastic guy called Joe Joyce. And Joe started off as an academy manager and was on the field. And in those 7 years, he was never on the field after those 7 years. He was always having to deal with parents, with problems with the kids, et cetera. So, and then when the Triple EP came in from the Premier League, and I was a technical consultant when it came in 2010, that program. So the Triple, the EPPP program was to do with funding from TV money to the academies to improve content and coaching. And I worked a year with the Premier League on that. And saw the frustration on many of the young coaches of the Premier League clubs. Their job was, their love was coaching, but more and more they had to fill in forms, they had to speak to parents, which is fine. But then they're drawn away from that coaching, like Joe was at Newcastle. And so that was a bugbear that if you introduce a lot of bureaucracy, especially at the academy level, then expect some of these coaches then to lose their enthusiasm and love. And certainly if it impinges on their time. And the parents one, how do you, in Japan, I know that we used to, I developed a program, a presentation to parents. It was a program every 6 weeks. The parents would come and watch a training session, and then the coach would explain why he was doing what he was doing and how he was doing it. And of course there were a lot of mothers there, etc., that probably didn't know a load about football. And it was a way of trying to say, look, please leave, I'm the teacher, please leave it to me, just support your kid. But it is a difficult one. Yes, I don't know if anybody's overcome, especially with the money in the game today, the unrealistic expectations some of these parents have.
Definitely. I thought I can definitely relate to that one. I think it's probably part of the reason why I prefer working with older players.
Yeah, I said.
You know, just to kind of take you back to your journey then a little bit, you know, you talked there about essentially one of the challenges there really is about dealing with parents, you know, but more specifically with your own coaching journey, what would you say one of your biggest challenges have been? And is it something that you've been able to get over with? And I hope you have. And if not, then what are your plans to get over it?
Once we started the Curva curriculum in 84, Charlie and I started that. The big challenge was, how do you update it? How do you know yourself, yes, people say, oh yeah, I've seen that, you know. And how do you actually refresh it? How do you update it? And for 40 years, I think we managed to do it. We've introduced, you know, like I told you about the mirror moves. You know, that was a new introduction. We've got what we call our skills bridge, which is the interpretation of Erickson's 10,000 hours theory about the Curva method. We've introduced a scientific basis for Curva through this wonderful, two medical doctors, Dr. Peter Brain and Dr. Andreas Stoyan, my closest friends, and they've explained to me how the brain learns. And how you wire skills and the importance of looking after yourself physically, you know, what you eat, how much you sleep, so that the coach becomes, like Dr. Stoyan has written a wonderful little piece about coaching health, that the coach can actually say, look, too much time on the computer, not enough sleep, drinking fizzy drinks, drinking garbage food, this is going to damage your football. And so the challenge was, how do you always refresh Curva? And through Charlie and I trying to be innovative and add to that curriculum, we've also then gone to the best, like Dr. Bain, one of the most famous neurologists in the world, who's a crazy football fan, and who's helped us understand how the brain actually learns. Once you understand that, then it'll affect your drill DNA. Because obviously my academic career was abysmal. I've learned more from Dr. Peter Bain about how the brain works as my career as a coach than I could have ever learned at university, I think.
I think you make a great point there about reaching out in looking far and wider beyond your own context to kind of get that information and see how you can further develop, not just to people you're working with, but yourself. And I think, you know, that's a real big aim for me on this particular platform, is about sharing that information with people like yourself and, you know, whoever else may be on the platform. Because there is loads of information out there, and yeah, I think it's really important that coaches do share that. So Alf, you know, as we start to kind of wind down, then, you know, you talk there about 40 odd years working in coaching, you know, you talk there a little bit about stepping away from the, I guess, the main day-to-day stuff over at Curver at the moment. But what's next for Alf? What are you doing next?
Well, there's always something new to learn. So I want to learn, you know, especially with Dr. Bain and how the brain learns and skills. I am authoring three. So one of the things was this zone. Remember, we were talking about zone specific training. Yeah. So one of the things I'm working on is trying to adapt the Curver drills and session planning to that. That's slightly older kids. On the other end of the spectrum, a subject I know nothing about, but my sister was a headmistress of a Montessori school for 36 years. There really isn't anything, well, there is, but nothing that grabs me for under 8 kids. And I know nothing about that age group, I've got to tell you. But I do know that the Curver drill DNA can be adapted to that age group. So that's another project that I'm working on. And, you know, in the last few weeks, I've done so many programs like yours, you know, where maybe COVID, the only plus about COVID is that you can get to many, many millions of people through media like you. And so if I've got anything to give, it's just, you know, while I can remember everything pretty well, is just share what I've learned. Or it's not, because maybe a lot of stuff I've learned hasn't been right, but I have experienced things. And therefore, if I don't distort them, if I tell them accurately, then it may be helpful to somebody else, because I went through, you know, that's all experience is. It's shortcutting time.
100%, I totally agree with that. So I guess, you know, on that note then, you know, if I was to give you 60 seconds now to kind of wrap up some golden nuggets for our listeners, what would those be?
Maybe advice to you guys that there's always something to learn. So, you know, don't stop. Even when you get your pro license, there's always something to learn. There's always somebody to learn from. One of the people I was going to mention was Arsene Wenger. Since Japan days, Arsene and I have had conversations. This is a man that you can learn just in 1 minute. You can learn useful things. I won't say great things. So try to seek out people that know more than you. Not this is not a competition. I don't mean it like that. But just have been around different situations that may have picked up different experiences. So it's I didn't mean it like know more as far as, you know, a competitive way. I mean that have experience. And that's why I so like mentoring now, because whether it's live or like this, it gives me a chance through conversation to say to you, look, you know, like I said to you, try to listen more, talk less, try to understand that football's not a science, it's more like an art. Only science is true.
I think that's a great point that you made there, you know, about seeking out essentially, you know, mentors in some ways, you know, looking at people who have got some of the experience. And I think, you know, on that note, I just want to make a note to the listeners as well, you know, being very specific about who those people are. So if you've got a particular area that you want to develop in, then seek someone who's good at that, not just someone who's got experience in the game, so to speak, because that might not be their specialty. So look at people who are actually good at the things that you want to get better at, I think is a key thing to kind of just add on to that. Again, look, Alf, you know, you've had a long career, still going, looking very healthy, great skincare routine going on. what would you say, you know, now, if you know, you've worked in so many different people, worked in so many different environments in different countries, what is the legacy that you want to leave behind when you're no longer part of that environment or that context, or you leave a situation?
That I contributed to the teaching and learning of the game.
Oh, simple and effective. I think, you know, I think that's a massive one. I think, you know, it's, we get into this business, one, because we love the game. But then I think we all, you know, deep down, find another love for helping people. I think, you know, and I think that's a massive part of certainly why I'm doing this. So, you know, I think having that, you know, just that little piece of, you know, gratitude and a satisfaction that you've actually helped someone along their journey, I think is, and if we help one person at a time, even if it's just one of us helping one, you know, you can't please everyone, you can't help everyone, but I think just change one person's, you know, having an impact on one person, I think is going to be more than enough. So, Alf, just on a final note, then obviously, you know, we talked a little bit before the start of this conversation around some of the programs and things that you guys have got coming up. You just want to share a bit of information around that and, you know, let the listeners know where they can potentially get in touch with you if they want more information.
Yeah, so, yes, I guess we'll send you the links, et cetera. But we do have, if you now, in, especially in COVID times, an online diploma where we'll send you the link. It's Charlie and myself presenting. We don't often work together now. He still lives in the US, I live in the UK. But certainly in this last 10 months, we've been doing more together. So that we can tell you it's basically diploma one is about session planning and our ideas about using Curve to session plan. So I would recommend that. I think it's useful. I think we've got a couple of other courses that when you go to the Curve site, you can log into if it's helpful to you. So yes, I think materials and backup and media, what you're doing, Yaz, is so important. Because I think you're a vehicle for us that want to pass on messages. And now we've seen, even post-COVID, it'll never be the same. The platforms like yours are always going to be important and more important.
Definitely. And I think, you know, thank you for that as well. So guys, and anyone that is obviously tuned into this, I'll be sure to add those links and those social media handles in the show notes. But look, Alf, it's been a, you know, great conversation. You know, certainly I've picked up a lot and, you know, certainly clarified further some of the things that I already, you know, do within my own practice. So I want to thank you again for your time this morning. I'm sure the listeners and viewers have enjoyed it as much as I have. There you guys have it. It's Alf Galician.
Thank you very much, Yaz. I enjoyed talking with you, and all of you stay safe, please.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.